We'll give it a second.
Blog Talk Radio.
There you go.
This is Ground Zero with Nia Betts and Reginald Clements celebrating Love in the Movement. We are going to have a continuation this week of last week's show, where we want to finish up 24 points that are by Dr. Sheen about modern incarceration. We're doing a comparative analysis between modern day incarceration and the Willie Lynch letter, which is How to Make a Slave. And Dr. Edward Sheen gave a presentation in Washington, D.C. back in 1961. And the presentation was called Man Against Man. And it's excerpts from Schooling the Generations. The Federal Bureau of Prisons director was there, whose name is James V. Bennett. And James V. Bennett, along with other wards from around the country, as well as numerous social scientists. But before we go further into the show today, I'd like to turn it over to Nia for the announcements and different things she'd like to address.
Yeah, what you want me to announce?
I'm saying deal with the phone number for people to call in. If anybody want to call in,
phone number.
You got the phone number handy for the switchboard?
Yeah, the phone number is 657-383.
Your show now, press 1. To hear important instructions, press 2.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
The phone number is...
To start your show now, press 1. To hear important instructions, press 2.
Yeah, the phone number is what again?
657-383-1630.
To start your show now, press 1. To hear important instructions, press 2.
Yes, and also, if you want to donate, there's a website set up called the African American Trust Fund. What the African American Trust Fund is there for is for the protection of African American intellectual properties in order to industrialize the African American innovative ideas and the creative ideas that are copywritten, and like songs, artwork, inventions, books, clothes, anything that is a product of African American creativity, which we haven't been allowed to benefit from within the investment banking structure that exists today. Because venture capitalists do not seek to invest in African American ideas as readily as we have ideas. So it is up to us to use our ideas, use our intellectual property, as well as our real estate property to create generational wealth. And the African American Trust Fund will, by creating generational wealth, it will bring down the crime. Because if you create job opportunity and educational opportunities in any community, reduce poverty, you will decrease the crime rate. If you deprive people of job opportunities and educational opportunities, it increases the crime rate. And the African American Trust Fund seeks to address this directly and head on through copyrights and patent protection. Also, we need you to contribute to the show and help us with criminal justice reform, and offer us and provide us with any information of anybody that you feel we should contact, or with any information that you think will be helpful in curbing recidivism and reducing recidivism, which is people returning to prison with new cases, when in fact there is options out there for people to find a way out of the cycle of violence, out of the cycle of incarceration, generational incarceration within many poor families is something that is a plague in poor communities. Would you like to add anything tonight?
Nope, you can take it away. We only got 20 more minutes left.
All right. Well, as I was saying earlier, we left off with example 7. He lists 24 examples. So we're going to pick up with example 8. And example 8 says, convincing prisoners that they can trust no one. One thing that we discussed as well, dealing with what is it that the prison system is trying to accomplish when it comes to character building? What type of individual you're talking about? It's a brainwash. This is a brainwashing program that's been implemented and has been implemented. I've lived within this system for the past 30 years of how they sow seeds of dissension and distrust and selfishness amongst prisoners. So if you don't want me to trust nobody, then you don't want me to exhibit attributes of an individual that is to be trusted. And if I do start exhibiting any positive character traits, I've actually experienced where I've had staff start tripping with me because they felt like I thought I was better than everybody else. All because I started exhibiting positive character traits, or I refused to be selfish, or refuse not to speak up for somebody else or on somebody else's behalf, or because they saw me trying to help somebody.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
By giving them a postage stamp in the envelope so that they could write home to their family or try to contact.
You have 1 minute left.
To get help. And these selfish things, these selfish ways are something that leads a person to crime, leads a person to prison. It causes a person to be dysfunctional and counterproductive in their life, in the lives of others. So it makes a person untrustworthy if you convince the prisoner that they can trust no one. With that, I'm going to turn the show over to Anaya, and I want to resume in a few minutes after this station break.
Okay, so let's...
The caller has hung up.
Let's dive deeper a little bit into that, right? So who trains the staff or the officers to uphold this type of culture, uphold this type of behavior, right? How can an officer see someone actually doing well or doing something positive inside of a prison and punish the inmate for doing something that leads to good behavior? How can they really do that? Are they trained to do that? Or is this just the culture? Is this just the brainwashing that people fall into and they go with okey-doke?
To use this free call, press 2. If you would like to permanent thank you for using.
And now
we'll
have Reginald Clemens back online to move on to the next question. I mean, the next statement.
Yeah, the example 9 says, treating those who are willing to collaborate in far more lenient ways than those who are not. Read that again. Treating those who are willing to collaborate in far more lenient ways than those who are not. In other words, there's somebody who's willing to cooperate, work with the administration in whatever it is that the administration is trying to accomplish, good, bad, or indifferent. In the I want to point out in the policy rule book, it says that prisoners don't have any constitutional rights. Well, it's sad, but that's the ruling by the United States Supreme Court back in 1996 during the Clinton administration. In the 90s, Bill Clinton, under his mass incarceration and prison industrial complex agenda, stripped prisoners of all rights. If you're not bleeding or half dead, then you don't really have a case to file a lawsuit. If your constitutional rights are violated, in the cases, one of them is Turner versus Safely, and the other case is Bounds versus Smith. In these two cases, especially in Turner versus Safely, and Turner versus Safely, it clearly says that anything and everything within the prison system falls upon the safety and security of the institution, and the courts are not going to be involved or get involved with day-to-day operations of institutions. Well, when it comes to them treating prisoners more leniently than other prisoners, what it is there's a flip side to that. Prisoners' rights are violated, constitutional rights are ignored, and there's a lot of cruel and unusual punishment that has taken place with no redress or recourse. And the courts are wholly reluctant to do anything. Anytime you file a complaint in the court about something happening to you in prison, the court tells you to file a grievance to the same prison that just got, the prison or prison staff that just got to violate your rights. So being more lenient means that they violate your rights a little bit less. Because right now they have, all over this country, they have prisoners locked down in cells, 10 by 11 cells, 24 hours a day, sometimes 22 hours a day, 23 hours a day, and it's double man cells. And the cells are only big enough for one person. They got prisoners locked up in ag cells who are supposed to be declared dangerous to themselves and others, but they're double in double cells together. This is a recipe for disaster, to create inhumane conditions of extreme tension in this matter. And I would like people to take that into consideration when they think about all the anxiety and frustration that is built up within individuals prior to release from prison. Because prison is not a microcosm unto itself. It's a forgotten place. It should not be forgotten. It's a place that needs greater and more transparency so that we can create a more rehabilitative atmosphere. Because impunity creates absolute power. We know absolute power corrupts absolutely. Look at what Vladimir Putin is doing. He has experienced absolute power, or the illusion of absolute power, which has driven his egomania over the top. That's another subject for another conversation. Well, and that's what example 9 is dealing with, is the deprivation of rights in order to pressure others into collaborating with the prison administration. 10 says punishing those who show uncooperative attitudes. So, in addition to violating constitutional rights, there's people that get targeted. I've been targeted before. And they make up rules. That is, they make up rules to harass you. When you're following all the rules, that's not good. I've had guards tell me to look at their shoes when I'm talking to them. I had guards tell me that I can't look, if I look them in the eyes, it's reckless eyeballs. And I've had a guard write me up and punish me for making a three-way call with my attorney, with two attorneys on the phone. I've been punished for a hole in my tile, a small hole in my drying tile. I've been punished for some of the most outlandish things that are not in the rule book. And there's nothing that can be done about that level of abuse, because the court once again said that they're not going to monitor the day-to-day operations of prison. And that this harassment is encouraged in a lot of ways by this very system of man against man by Dr. Sheen. Now, moving on to example 11. A systematic withholding of mail. I mentioned that earlier about me getting in trouble for giving somebody a stamp and envelope to write their family. That probably was somebody that, unbeknownst to me, that they were targeting and trying to withhold their mail. And I've heard of people complain about their mail being withheld. And that's why even legal mail that was supposed to be going out to the courts has disappeared. And people were punished in ways that are not only unconstitutional but are illegal, because they're not supposed to be able to tamper with U.S. mail. Even as Dr. Sheen wrote this, I'm sure he knew that it's against federal law to tamper with U.S. mail. But yet, he put it right here. It was allowed to be presented in the presentation. And it's been put into practice. An openly unlawful act. A knowingly unlawful act. Because a system has been created where prisoners don't have rights. And the intent was that prisoners' rights be stripped prior to Bill Clinton. Back in 1861, the agenda was laid. Prior to this 1960s, back in the 1940s and 50s, prison was more about rehabilitation and reform. But that also is for the conversation that we'll have in the future about the diverse difference between past incarceration and modern incarceration and different manifestations that incarceration has gone through in America for various reasons. Okay, now moving on to 12, preventing contact with anyone non-sympathetic to the method or treatment and regimen of the captive population. So that means anybody that's not promoting, following oppressive, abusive rules, anyone that's willing to submit to looking at an officer's shoes when talking to them, anybody that's not willing to cooperate with not speaking up for other people, anybody who files grievance complaints about the abuse that they suffer, those people are targeted.
And this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
And then isolated in an accident, what is called disciplinary segregation or administrative segregation. The difference is disciplinary segregation is for punishment purposes. And it is only supposed to last 30 to 90 days maximum. And the normal regimen should be 10 days at a time. But administrative segregation is for safety and security of the institution. Now, operation, I've been placed upon the investigation for things that had nothing to do with the rule book. I remember I was placed upon the investigation for making a legal call, and they investigated it and then found me guilty of making a three-way call to an attorney. And then I ain't supposed to be monitoring legal calls. That's illegal and unconstitutional. But they had to make up something because I wasn't breaking the rules. I wasn't violating the rules. So a lot of times they just made things up. All because I used to inform other prisoners of what their rights are, what the policy is, and how to protect their rights, or what efforts they could possibly make to protect their rights And my objective goal was not to be resistant to the prison administration. My objective goal was to try and promote dignity and self-respect. Try and promote respect for others. Try and promote some type of kindness to one another so we can find some type of mutual way to live amongst one another within these dismal walls. To have some type of societal common unity or common understanding. That's what community is. It's a common understanding that people unify around. That's where the word community comes in. So if people want people to live out in society, they should want people in prison to have dignity and self-respect in some manner in order to preserve our sense of humanity and build upon whatever redeemable character traits are there, of trying to heal whatever wounds exist, not going in the opposite direction as such as this does. Now, example 14 says, this organization of all group standards amongst the prisoners. We try, a lot of times, to help each other peer-to-peer. Most of the organizations and rehabilitation programs in prison are ran on a peer-to-peer basis, where prisoners facilitate the programs to teach other prisoners. And prisoners teach each other when it comes to like GED classes and different things like that. And we're getting kind of low on time, so I'm going to speed it up a little bit. I would love to talk about this in greater detail, because each one of these examples need to be addressed and really need to be fleshed out. Undermining is 15, undermining of all emotional support. That's the part where it's separation from family. And number 16 says, preventing prisoners from writing home or to friends in the community regarding the conditions of their confinement. That's kind of self-explanatory, where the first thing that an abuser wants to do is to isolate a person in order to make their, so that their abuse can be unreported, unaddressed, unconfronted, and they can abuse the person as they see fit.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you want it? Then they don't want the family to know about the conditions of their confinement. They don't want society to know what's going on within these prison walls. 17, making available and permitting access to only the publications and books that contain material which are neutral to or in support of the desired new attitudes. They do it. Don't send a Larry Rice paper, Cry Justice Journal. They put prisoner stories out there. They shut that down. They will not let that into the prison system. There's a lot of, I remember there was a publication called Justice Express, and they shut that, they blocked that publication from coming in. The Santa Fe newsletter, and a lot of other conscious newsletters about what prison and prison is going on in different prisons and different states and everything. They shut them down, a lot of those publications, from getting into prison. And they claim it's part of Homeland Security. No, it's part of the constitutional violation under the guise of Homeland Security. At 18, placing individuals into a new and ambiguous situation for which the standards are kept deliberately unclear and then put pressure on them to conform to what is desired in order to win favor and reprieve from the pressure. That's harassment and abuse.
Right.
That's arbitrary, atypical harassment and
abuse. Yeah.
And but it's being disguised, and but it's being telling you, well, this is for brainwashing people. This is a brainwashing program, but to brainwash prisoners into what? Submissive slaves.
Right.
Because if you read the Willie Lynch letter and you compare it to what I'm reading right now, there's not too much of a parallel difference in line by line. Breaking of a slave, turning light-skinned people against dark-skinned people, mother against father, young against old.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ways of the devil. I'm saying people, we shouldn't practice evil willingly, and we shouldn't watch people practice evil willingly in any shape, form, or fashion. And there's no, can be no social justice if there's no social economic justice. 19, placing individuals whose willpower has been severely weakened or eroded into a living situation with several others who are more advanced in their thoughts, thought reform, and those and whose job it is to further the undermining of the individual's emotional supports, which were begun by isolating them from family and friends.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Anybody with a sense of humanity knows it to speak for itself. So. What'd you say?
You got 3 minutes.
Using techniques of, there's four more. But I think so far it basically speaks for itself. So. And we're going to continue to talk about some of these psychological impact issues when it comes to the design and structure of prison. There was an experiment that was conducted that we're going to address in the future also, where regular civilians were put in positions of prison administrators. And it turned out horrible. And extremely abusive in less than 2 weeks.
Mm.
But we'll get off into that. Well, in closing, I love you all. I love our humanity. Support Ukraine. Support the people of Ukraine. If we can end this genocide, mass slaughter as soon as possible, we need to. In the world, America needs to join the World Tribunal Court. America don't want to because America has its own history and its own wrongs, but we don't get past, we don't get back to humanity and get back to nurturing, prosperous, loving societies and being civilized until we face our own wrongs and own up to our own evils. We can't move forward. I'm sorry for all my wrongs. And I hope that God provides me an opportunity for redemption. Truth and reconciliation. Anybody that I have wrong, I apologize to you and hope the opportunity to make
you have 1 minute left.
And I hope other people will seek to do the same.
Mm-hmm. That was Ground Zero with Reginald Clemens and Anaya Best. We have 1 minute and 30 seconds left. Are there any?
Yes. Please go to the African American Trust Fund and donate. It's for the liberation of African American people from the residue of slavery. We are not fully free. We're not exactly slaves, but we're not fully free. By my calculus and legal analysis, we are considered domestic slaves under the law. But we need to get from up under that banner and get our full rights so that we can have just as much impact.
All righty. Thank you all for tuning in, and this is Ground Zero. We're out.